is to finish up the proof of that basic theorem. So complete the construction of exponentially growing solutions. Then we'll change gears and sketch the 1D Gelfand Levitan Marchenko inverse scattering method. So the idea is, once we have these solutions, I'm going to read this theorem to you again, but once we construct them, what do we do with them? So as motivation on what we do with them, I'm going to introduce or how we do inverse scattering in 1D. So this is several decades we're spend solving 1D problems. I'm going to condense those several decades into about an hour, and then use that to look to motivate. So let's say large X asymptotics of psi. So this will be then back to 2D. And the scattering transform of Q. So that's the plan for today. All right, so this theorem takes a while to, it's more than a mouthful, so I wrote it in three colors. In white is the main thing. What are we doing? We're simply constructing solutions of the Schrödinger equation for potentials in LP. Up here in purple are the assumptions on the potential. So basically, if you just wanted solutions for large K, we would simply take Q and LP. Stop. However, to have solutions for every complex K, we have this additional assumption that Q is Laplace psi naught over psi naught for some bounded psi naught. So this assumption turns out to be sufficient, and it's essentially necessary as well. I don't know if we'll ever get to prove that. So this assumption, so I'll put in here. So this is enough. If we just want solutions for large K. So this is sufficient for absence of exceptional points. I haven't told you what exceptional points are. Okay. So I haven't told you what that is, I'll tell you. So basically for unique solvability, so absence of exceptional points, i.e. unique solvability, sorry to write small here, for all k non-zero. So absence of exceptional points and this are the same thing. Right. So there is such a solution. It's unique provided you assume it's in LP tilde intersect L infinity. And now in light blue, I have some extra properties of this solution. One is that it actually ends up being in W1P tilde. And two is that for sufficiently large k, we have this estimate. So this shows that it goes to 1 for large k. All right, so to construct such solutions, we looked at the Laplacian conjugated by these exponentials. In general, it's this operator. If we're in 2D, zeta squared equals 0, we can think of as kik, in which case it looks like this. By the way, if zeta happens to be k minus ik, well, it'll be that. And so we solve that problem by looking at the inverse of this constant coefficient operator. So on the Fourier transform side, this is xi squared plus 2k xi1 plus ixi2 f hat. So we can think of M as convolution by an operator, by a Green's function. This is what I call the Fadeev Green's function. But rather than work with GK in a pointwise manner, I've chosen to work with the operator MK. And so in particular, we constructed MK as, so this is all review, which, since you've been looking at the notes very carefully and you know them by heart, is going to be very boring for you, but just in case. where D bar inverse, if you wish it, is by definition 1 over pi. Cauchy integral. And last time we spent a fair amount of time proving the following lemma. Let Q satisfy the hypothesis of the theorem. So it's in LP and there is such a psi naught. If H is, and I just proved it for real valued, minus Laplace plus QH is 0 with H e to the minus IZK in W1P tilde, then H is identically 0. Right? And we did this by essentially factoring the operator minus Laplace plus Q into two first order operators and using uniqueness for pseudoanalytic functions. So I'll have now a new improved lemma. What number did this lemma have, Katrin?
Which one?
So we improved the proposition down, but downgraded it to a lemma. So let's call it proposition, sorry. So new improved proposition. Here K is different from 0. Q as above minus Laplace plus QH is 0. And H is in LP tilde intersect L infinity. Then H is identically 0. So there was some a note that I wrote down, which was still in the required proof. Okay, so proof. Nope. So H possibly, so H allowed to be, that's part of the improvement. Wait, this is stupid. This is H e to the minus IZK.
Isn't your
I don't need the derivative and I don't need real. So, proof. Suppose Laplace plus QH is 0 and H e to the minus IZK is in LP tilde intersect at infinity, i.e., this is the same as the absolute value of H, e to the imaginary part of ZK is in LP tilde intersect L infinity. Okay. Then write H as HR plus IHI, then HR satisfies the same thing, the real part of H. So this is, somewhere we should have said Q is real valued. That's sort of implied by the fact that the moment I write this down, psi naught is real valued. But so maybe I put here, note Q is real valued. I suspect the proposition is false. If Q is not real valued. So, because Q is real valued, the equation holds separately for the real and imaginary parts of H, and HR e to the ZKI so HR e to the minus IZK is in LP tilde intersect L infinity. Okay. Let H tilde be HR e to the minus IZK. This is in LP tilde intersect L infinity. Then now we're conjugating the Laplacian. So the equation for H tilde is minus Laplace minus 4 IK D bar H tilde equals 0. Okay, so you take HR equal H tilde E to the IZK, substitute in here, you get that. Whoops, plus Q. So equals minus Q H bar, H tilde. Well, this is in LP, since H tilde is in L infinity and Q is in LP. So the right side is in LP. The left side, H tilde, is in LP tilde. By assumption. And when we studied this, we had a uniqueness result, right? Saying that there's a unique solution in LP tilde of this equation, namely MK. So by uniqueness, four minus Laplace minus four I K D bar H tilde is inverse of Q H tilde. And what the basic estimate on MK is that it takes LP to LP tilde, to W1P tilde. And MKF WSP tilde is less than constant over K to the 1 minus S FLP. So we already have the estimate we want in the case of constant coefficient operator. We now want it on the variable. But anyway, MK takes something in LP and throws it into W1P tilde. So this is how I bootstrap myself from, now you see why I want LP tilde intersect at infinity. L infinity I use here to be in LP and so forth. So now H tilde satisfies precisely the assumptions in the proposition. Proposition. H tilde. H tilde is HR e to the minus IZK.
So H tilde is on W1.
Right.
But you need to multiply
it
by E minus IZK.
Ah, right. Right. By the proposition applied to, you're right, applied to HR. Okay. So thus, HR e to the minus IZK is in W1P tilde. So it satisfies the Schrödinger equation, and that condition we have HR identity zero. Similarly for HI. So now we want to, so proof of the theorem completed. All right, what do we have so far? We let mu be psi e to the minus izk. We've already proved, so maybe I should say this first. We've already proved uniqueness. That's the new improved proposition. Right? If you read what it says, if you have two solutions, psi, such that e to the minus ik z psi minus 1 are in here, then their difference satisfies this. So their difference has precisely the assumption of the new improved proposition. Therefore, their difference is 0. They're the same. So to prove existence, we let mu equals this. So what do we have? We have minus Laplace minus 4 ik d bar mu has to equal minus q mu. With mu minus 1 in W1 P2. Or it's enough to say in LP tilde intersect L infinity. So briefly, we let mu tilde equals mu minus 1, then minus Laplace minus 4 I k d bar. So the problem is that 1 is not one is not in the space I'm working with. So we look at the equation mu tilde satisfies mu is mu, so this is minus q mu tilde. So therefore, as I pointed out last time, this is an LP. This mu tilde is in LP tilde. So mu tilde has to be MKQ minus MKQ mu tilde. So I'm setting up the Yes, right. So so we treat this as a linear integral equation. So this is similar to what happens in scattering theory, where you construct, so maybe I'll write this out. So this is analogous to the construction of generalized eigenfunctions. Minus Laplacian plus Q in scattering theory, via, so the corresponding integral equation is called the Lippmann-Schwinger equation. Except there, we don't have exponentially growing solutions. We have essentially distorted plane waves. So they're also called distorted plane waves. So maybe I should tell you a few words, because that will motivate you I don't want to start the whole business with scattering theory, but maybe a few words about this, so a little aside. So if Q is identically zero, minus Laplacian of e to the I x xi, as you know, is xi squared e to the I x xi. So here, xi is real. And so since any f, any nice F, is a superposition of such plane waves, any nice F is a superposition such plane waves, well, that allows us to do the spectral theory of the Laplacian, because we have it diagonalized, right? In some sense, this is a basis. Any F can be written as a linear combination of these. And every basis element is when the Laplacian is applied to it, is just multiplied by a number times the same thing. So this basis diagonalizes the Laplacian and allows full understanding of its spectral Now, why are they called generalized eigenfunctions? Well, because they're not L2. Since e to the I x c is not in L2, these are sometimes called generalized eigenfunctions. So that is the reason, in fact, as we know, these diagonalize not just the Laplacian, but any constant coefficient PDE, linear PDE. So that's why the analysis of constant coefficients, linear PDEs, is made very easy using the Fourier transform. So now what about if Q is not zero? We look for solutions of minus Laplace plus Q. Let's call them phi. This equals c squared phi. Modeled on e to the I x c. So how do we impose that they're modeled? Well, we just say far away this should approach that. Well, so here's a little subtlety I don't want to go into too carefully right now. This doesn't pin down the solutions. So here, there are a lot of solutions which go to zero. You don't have a uniqueness like the lemma that I described before, the proposition we had before. So you have to, this is not enough, you have to add. So to make this unique, need to add another condition at infinity, so the fancy word, it's called a Sommerfeld radiation condition. Maybe there's two M in Sommerfeld. So this basically says that the solutions are outgoing waves. So this pins down a Green's function So equivalently, this amounts to a choice of Green's function for minus Laplacian minus kappa squared. So let me give you that. Green's function c squared minus kappa squared and here I'll take minus I0. So this is a singular integral. The difference from the Green's function we're playing with, this one here, is that this kernel is locally integrable, whereas this is not. And so you need to understand the singular integral as either the principal value, minus I0 plus I0, that corresponds to different conditions at infinity. So I believe outgoing corresponds to this, to the minus I0. And so, again, so then star no it isn't minus kappa squared, so this vanishes on a sphere and it vanishes to No. It's the sphere. C squared equals 1. No. Xi is real. Xi is in Rn. Xi is real throughout here. So this is just the sphere Xi equals kappa. The roundest sphere of all. So star is equivalent to phi e to the I x c minus g convolved with q phi. So maybe I'll come back to scattering theory. This is the famous Lippmann-Schwinger equation. Now I'm starting to think there may be two ends as well. Where's another K? Oh, I only have kappa here. Oh, this one here? Kappa. I don't want to confuse with my K over there. Okay, so I went a little fast over this. So the subtlety is precisely in the choice of Green's function and how it connects with the behavior at infinity. So that needs more explanation. But what I wanted you to see is, you know, this is something that is in all the textbooks. Even physicists know this. And that's very much what we have here. Basically, if you write psi formally, It's of this form. So this integral equation is basically that integral equation. Here, psi is not in a nice space, so that's why I factor out the exponential. Okay? No, this is the psi in the theorem. So what I'm saying is the integral equation we're about to look at is analogous with a different Green's function to the Lippmann-Schwinger equation. And I wanted you to somehow have one more motivation for studying such solutions. Why on earth do we care to construct solutions like this? Well, in the case of distorted plane waves, so these are no longer plane waves, we call them distorted plane waves. Or generalized eigenfunctions of minus Laplace plus Q. So the motivation is, if you want to understand this spectral theory of this operator, can we try to diagonalize this? This applied to phi should be some number times phi itself, modeled on the beautiful plane waves which diagonalize the Laplacian. And in fact, there is a, so one can construct these, and there is a distorted Fourier transform, right, based on these. The outgoing condition at infinity. Right. Which I do not wish to stress. I'm just using this as motivation. If you don't like it, you can ignore what's on these three blackboards. Yes? So, that's a whole field out there, but basically, if you look in physics textbooks, they do pointwise estimates on this Green's function. And the problem with that, if you start doing pointwise estimates, is you require something like this, which grows with n. Let's say, I don't know, n plus 1. So the higher the dimension, the more decay people needed. So it was a breakthrough by Agmon, who proved in the 70s that proved that G kappa, goes from a weighted L2 space we'll talk about weighted L2 soon enough And this requires, and so Q is less than 1 over 1 plus X, 1 plus epsilon in all dimensions is sufficient. So this is what's called short range. Coulomb potentials decay like 1 over X. This whole thing breaks down for such things. So what happens is simply that if Q is not decaying enough, it is no longer a small perturbation of the Laplacian. And this whole theory, right, treats things as perturbations of what happens for the Laplacian. So there is another theory for long-range potentials, but there you can no longer take as your model the things for the Laplacian. Now, you can also allow singularities. So singularities, okay, too. And the rule of thumb is that, again, Q, so near a point, should be I believe you need 2 minus epsilon here. So if you have a singularity like 1 over x squared, again, that's too strong, comparable to the Laplacian. Anything weaker is okay. And then there's a whole zoo of spaces that include singularities and decay. There's a Kato class. There's so these two things will come together in that. Right. So in something that I did with Rick Levine, we work with Q and Ln over 2, which is my favorite class just because of elegance. So this is in n bigger than or equal to 3. All right. So this was supposed to be motivation. For why you should love this integral equation as much as I do, but I got a bit carried away, so let's stop and reconvene at 11:15 to finish the theorem. note taker. What notes? I don't have notes. I make this up as I go along.
What? But did you just ask you to bring them the notes?
No. I'm happy to have your notes put up on the web. Okay, so I'm now erasing the motivation. So you made the point that this looks a lot like eigenvalue problems. So minus Laplacian does not have eigenvalues on L2, right? It only has continuous spectrum. And that's somehow connected to the fact that these so-called generalized eigenfunctions are not square integral. If we had square integrable eigenfunctions, that would correspond to actual eigenvalues, pure point spectrum. So this is for the Laplacian. For minus Laplacian plus Q, these generalized eigenfunctions correspond again to the continuous spectrum. So minus Laplacian plus Q has a continuous spectrum. It may also have eigenvalues, which are negative and correspond to bound state energies. Okay, so if you can, if you happen to be able to find a solution phi which satisfies this and is in L2, that forces kappa to be negative and gives you these bounds. This issue will show up in a moment when I talk about the Gelfand-Levitan business. All right. So energized by that motivation, we're now back at the proof of the theorem where we want to solve this integral equation. And so we can take, so last time, we pointed out that MKQ is a compact operator. From W1P tilde to W1P tilde. Um, Hence, I plus MKQ is Fredholm of index zero, so it's invertible. On W1P tilde, since its null space is trivial by the proposition. So if something is in the null space, then we show that it's, like, it's basically one of the H's that we had in the proposition, so it must be zero. Therefore, this is invertible, and mu tilde has to equal, so we have there I plus MKQ mu tilde equals minus MKQ. This is in W1P tilde, and so mu tilde is I plus MKQ inverse with a minus sign MKQ. Or mu is 1 plus mu tilde, 1 plus 1 minus I plus MKQ inverse of MKQ. Okay, so for any k, there is a unique mu with mu minus 1 is in L infinity LP tilde. And mu minus 1 is psi e to the minus izk minus 1. So that's what we had over here. Furthermore, mu minus 1 is in W1p tilde, so that proves this. And so what remains to do is to prove this estimate. I'll say here, this completes the existence proof. And shows that psi e to the minus izk minus 1, which is mu minus 1, is in W1p tilde. It remains to prove the large K DK estimate. So what I'm going to do is basically first make K large enough so that this is small and have this whole inverse have norm, let's say, less than 2. Okay, so this particular inverse is not going to give me decay, right? Because, for instance, when Q is, even when Q is 0, this is just the identity. So I can't expect this to decay in K. So all my decay will come from here. So this isn't hard. This is just a few lines. And then we're done with the theorem. So what we're going to do is this. So to do so, fix S naught with S naught bigger than 2 over P tilde. Then MKQF WS naught P tilde is less than a constant over K 1 minus S naught. QFLP. Why is that? Well, because what we know about MK. But now the point is that WS naught P tilde by Sobolev embedding, right? If the index S naught is bigger than the dimension over P tilde, this is a bounded function. And so, right, the L infinity, it's in fact continuous, but I don't care about this right now. So this is less than the L infinity norm of F times the LP norm of Q. This is by Sobolev embedding. So if so, choose K such that this constant K 1 minus S naught times the LP norm of Q, all that should be less than a half. So that's going to make this operator MKQ a contraction. So what does that mean? That means K has to be bigger than 2CQLP to the power 1 over 1 minus S naught. I don't know if you can read this from where you're sitting. 1 minus S naught. So that's why I took S naught less than 1. Sorry. So then, MKQ as an operator from WS naught P tilde to S naught P tilde, so operator norm, is less than or equal to, strictly, well, doesn't matter, less than or equal to 2, a half. right? This is less than a half times that. Okay, so I plus MKQ inverse this is less than the sum, the norm, the L. I'm sorry. S. Thank you. Right, it's a geometric series. So it has. So when I say k sufficiently large in this theorem, what I mean is this. Those are the k's for which I'll do it. K bigger than 2C LP norm of Q 1 over 1 minus F naught. So notice that for such K you get uniqueness without my lemma. That's why I said Q and LP is enough if you just want the solutions for large K. All right, so now what? So now, where's mu? Mu is here. Thus, mu minus 1 in WS naught P tilde All right, we have to do it in two steps. So this is equal to I plus MKQ inverse of MKQ. Okay, in WS naught P tilde less than or equal to twice. The S naught P tilde norm MKQ, and now using star star that's 2 times a constant times K to the 1 minus S naught LP norm of Q. So that's also, that's less than some number. Let's see, LP norm of Q times LP norm of Q. So it's less than 1. Choice of K. You'll see in a sec. Oh, why do I need that? need that. I'm sorry. Well, we'll see if I need it in a second. So let's try to do it without that. WSP tilde. Just a second. I now want to do WSP tilde of this. Okay? I know nothing about this inverse for small s. I mean, the only s for which I have this inverse bounded is 2. I mean, is s not? Okay? I want for every s. S is between 0 and 1. That's right. And that is going to be very easy because so I do need this. What I want to say is so mu minus 1 equals, so that's mu tilde, right? Is mk right. MKQ minus MKQ mu tilde. So mu minus 1 WSP tilde is less than, so this is by double star, a constant over k 1 minus s qlp. Plus q mu tilde lp. Right? Just from here. The LP norm of this plus that. But the norm of Q mu tilde LP is bounded by the LP norm of Q times the L infinity norm of mu tilde. And the L infinity norm of mu tilde is less than the S naught P tilde norm. So it's less than 1. Where? Because Well, it's an integral equation. Okay? Mu minus 1 is mk, and then mu again. So, yes, this decays in k, but I need control in mu. So I sort of have a preliminary step saying that mu is bounded, and I just, from that I get decay. So, so note we get exactly the same estimate as for the constant coefficient one, but the price is that this only works now for k sufficiently large. But anyway, this is a lousy estimate for k small, so I don't care. Yeah, but it might grow in k. It's in L infinity for every fixed k. I don't know how big it is in k. You mean LP tilde norm? Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That makes sense, by the way. If we're looking at things like this, whenever we differentiate in x, differentiating one in x brings down a k. So derivatives have less good decay in k than the function. Okay, are we done with this theorem? Everybody happy? Yes, sir. Right. Exactly. And I did that by with that S naught trick. I'm not saying there's no other way, but that's how I did it. Okay. So now we're done with the first line. We're down to Gelfand-Levitan in 1D. Okay? So again, we've constructed these solutions. The issue is, now what? What do we do with them? So we're going to take our inspiration from the 1D theory. And that will be an excuse to teach you a little bit about the 1D theory. So 1D. 1D inverse scattering. Of course, that can make easily a course by itself, so don't expect to see all the details in an hour. So we're going to be looking at minus d2 dx squared, let's call it phi, plus, let's call it v, so we shouldn't think of it as q, v phi equals k squared phi, x is now the real line. And for simplicity, I'm going to put very strong restrictions on V so that we can, this is all motivation. So we'll say V is bounded, and of compact support. And furthermore, no bound states. So what do I mean by that? Well, again, the spectrum of this operator on L2 usually goes from 0 to infinity, and with appropriate conditions on V, there are finitely many negative eigenvalues. Those eigenvalues complicate the formula I'm going to write down, and so I'm going to erase them. And there's a large class of potentials. For instance, if they're positive, positive V, for example, V positive, for which this is the case. Now, let me just say the theory has been proved for V. You don't need compact support, you don't need bounded, you don't need anything except this. So this is fairly recent work. Let me take 2 minutes to tell you the story. Fadeev in the 50s wrote this down and gave the proof. Deist and Trubovitz in the 70s found the miss. So Fadeev, 50s. Found a mistake in Fadeev's proof, and corrected it, and had a theory for V like this. One plus x squared. And then Mehlin, Anders Mehlin, in the 80s, late 80s, I think, proved it for this. No condition on the number of bound states. Now, I think in this class there are finitely many. I can't remember if here this actually allows infinitely many bound states, but I think not. I think this force is finite. There's a nice inequality on the number of bound states, which I think forces with this condition on V forces to be finite. Bound state, as I said three times already, is a negative eigenvalue of this operator. The bound state is a negative eigenfunction. Sorry, is an eigenfunction in L2. So psi bound. Satisfies this. Lambda psi bound and is in L2. So that's a bound state, and this is a bound state energy. in the hydrogen atom is the No. In what I'm going to do, I assume there are no such things. In what I'm going to do, yes. Now, what Sarah asked is, in the theory, do they make any such assumptions? The answer is no. So for general V that satisfies this, you can do inverse scattering. Furthermore, there is an inequality, right? So the how many lambdas are like this? There is an inequality saying there are finitely many such lambdas which with the number bounded by something like this. I have to double check that. The paper by Meilin is hard to read. There is a somehow easier to digest version in the book by Marchenko, who claims to also do it for this, but I haven't read that. I mean, I haven't checked. I've read through it, but I haven't checked every epsilon. Okay, so that was a bit of theory. And you solve this equation, right? There are two solutions, two linearly independent solutions, e to the ikx and e to the minus ikx. So if V is non-zero, and again, for simplicity of compact support, all right, so here's the support of V. If we look at the solution here, right, any function that satisfies, so define phi plus xk to be the unique solution of minus Laplace, minus d2 dx squared plus v p squared phi. Again, I want a solution of this on the line. Right? So let me look at this equation out here. Out here, phi satisfies this equation. So it must be a combination of these two. So specified to be phi is e to the I kx for x going to plus infinity. Now, how do you construct such a solution? can write the same spirit as what we did. This is a constant coefficient operator. You for the moment think of this as known. Right? So when you know how to solve the homogeneous problem, I'm now talking about first year ODE course. Okay? So what do we tell all the undergraduate students that we TA? We tell them use variation of parameters. Okay? So by variation of parameters, in other words, phi is e to the I kx c1 of x plus e to the minus I kx c2 of x, with c1 goes to 1 and c2 goes to 0. So you do the method of variation of parameters, and here's what you get. Where is it? Okay, I'll tell you what you get for, well, okay. We get phi, so phi plus equals e to the I kx minus so times 1 minus 1 over 4 I k integral from x to infinity e to minus I k y v of y phi plus of y k dy. So this is going to be your C1 plus e to the minus I k x, again for I k x to infinity e to the one moment I k y v of y phi plus of y k dy. Okay, so if this were known, it would appear here, and then that would give you the formula for the solution you're interested in. Well, this isn't known because it involved phi plus, so that turns the differential equation into an integral equation. So you can think of this as an elementary way of finding the Green's function. Right? Again, it's of the form phi plus is e to the I kx minus some Green's function applied to V5. Okay, it's 12 o'clock, so let's stop and continue with this in 10 minutes. Okay.
Oh,
you can't replicate the calculus. Okay. Okay. Let's want to stick to the big picture, and then we can try the calculation.
Now we can do our calculation.
Okay.
So you start the so if it behaves like e to the I K X, there is a unique solution.
Right.
Just saying e to the I K X at infinity, and in the plus infinity.
Yeah, but I mean it's identical to e to the it's identical. No, never mind outgoing. It's identical for x large. Yeah, then you also need something about the derivative. Just think of it as an initial value problem at infinity.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So that's why I do compact support, so I shouldn't have to worry about it. Okay, so, yes, sir? Yes, that is true. Well, for let's say Q... Let's say Q is in here. So then you can prove. No, this. I'm assuming for simplicity today that Q, it's not Q, it's V, has no bound states. Okay? This is not required in the general theory.
So No.
One can prove that if there is an eigen function in L2, lambda must be negative. That's also mini industry. So it's the business of no point spectrum embedded in the continuous spectrum. And again, if Q is very singular, you might have that. But here, for such Q, it's automatically the case that this implies lambda negative. It's also automatically the case that there's only finitely many lambdas for something like that. If you have Q, let's say just Q in L1, you might have infinitely many negative eigenvalues. Have I answered your question? Okay. So let's stick to the big picture. We're on the real line. Okay. We have a potential which is as nice as we can think of. And we know where the potential is zero, the solution must be a linear combination of these two. And so we have chosen phi plus the solution which is identical to e to the I kx for x sufficiently large. And for reasons that I'll need later on, I wrote down an integral equation for phi plus. Okay. Now, you take this, so in other words, you look at the initial value problem with the exponential here, you look at the solution. Now, once you have this phi plus, let's look at what happens here. So must have phi plus equal A of k e to the I kx plus B of k e to the minus I kx for x sufficiently negative. Right? These things are a basis of solutions. This satisfies that equation down here. And so there are two numbers such that this is true, depending on k. So this is a 2-minute definition of the scattering data. So naively, you sent in this, and you see what comes out at the other end. Actually, that's not what people do. Well, so now let's phi minus be defined by the same equation, but I take phi minus, I normalize it to be e to the I kx as x is near minus infinity. Okay, so if you look at A of k phi minus plus B of k phi minus of minus k, okay, it's a solution. It is a solution of the same equation. And it's equal to A of k e to the I x k plus B of k e to the minus I x k for x negative, for x in very small, which is the same as phi plus. Okay, so in other words, if I'm sitting here, so V is somewhere there. If I'm sitting here and I look at the initial value problem at this point, x equal minus 1,000, I get two answers to the same initial value problem. So by the uniqueness, for the initial value problem, for second order ODE, this has to equal that. 5 plus equals A of k phi minus plus B of k phi minus for all x. So this relation defines the scattering data. I'm going to modify that in a second. And this is going to be the basic equation that will allow me to do the inverse scatter. So some people call the following reduced. So well, let's just say so what one does, so it is. So one usually works with 5 plus divided by A of k. So 5 plus divided by A of k. So this is equal to e to the I kx plus B of k over A of k e to the minus I kx. For x very small. And it's equal to 1 over A of k e to the I kx for x very large. This is called the reflection coefficient, written R of k. And this is written sometimes T of k, and it's called the transmission coefficient. Okay, and the intuition is the following. The intuition is that you're sending e to the I kx over from minus infinity. This is what goes through. So at the other end, you'll get t of k e to the I kx. That's why this is called transmission. And this is what comes back to you. And that's why it's called reflection. So this is what's sent in, and it splits into something that comes back and something that goes through. That picture is a bit confusing because there's no time here. If you go to the right, this is time, this is somehow frequency domain. If you go to the time domain, it makes more sense. Okay, so this is really the scattering data that people talk about, reflection coefficient, transmission coefficient. And so we've established that the identity 5 plus over A equals 5 minus plus reflection coefficient Phi minus So we want to use this. Okay, so this is, if you wish, direct scattering. Right? You start with a potential and this is how things look like far away. Right? So the interaction, the idea is there's this interaction. You cannot get your hands on what happens during the interaction. So you sit far away from it. You send in this wave, e to the ikx. You look at what comes back, and you look at what goes through. And from this information from far away, from the region of interest, you want to now deduce something about the potential, the interaction we're after. So we want to use this to calculate V given R. It turns out it's enough to know R. So this is sometimes called reduced scattering data. So it's enough to just sit at minus infinity, send something, see what comes back to you. That should be enough. So we'll do this by exploiting the properties of the solutions, phi plus or minus, for k complex. So far k has been real. This is for k real. Of course, x real. Now I claim some of these things make sense for K complex and some don't. So let mu plus equal phi plus times e to the minus I x k. This may look familiar to you by now. We factor out the exponential because now k is going to be complex, and so Then, I claim so maybe exploiting the properties of for K complex and K large. Both of these things will come in. Okay. So I claim mu plus extends to an analytic function in the upper half plane, upper half K plane. So let's see why that is. How do you see that? You see that from the integral equation. So the integral equation for mu plus is mu plus equals so we factor out the exponential. So it's 1 minus 1 over 4 I k integral from x to infinity e to the minus I k y pi plus is mu. So this is 1 minus, so here I want to say V mu okay, and here I will have E to the minus 2IKX this gives me an e to the 2iky mu, so it's x minus y. Okay, I haven't done very much. I just factored out an exponential throughout that integral equation. Or you can write this as plus just to save on minus signs, plus y minus x. Okay, so the thing to note is here y is bigger than x, so this is positive. In the region of integration, and so if I replace k by e to the kr plus iki, right, this is well behaved. Never mind the real part. But this is minus 2ki y minus x. So this is well-behaved for ki positive. And of course, analytic in k. Okay, so think of it just formally, think of this as solving by iteration. first approximation mu is 1. Put in mu 1 is here. You get something analytic in K. With good estimates because of this. Go again. Now you have something analytic in K, something analytic in K, and so forth. So every single term will be analytic in K. So note also that mu minus 1 is 1 over 4k. One minus one plus, right? The exponential is bounded by one. Since the integral equation here is solved in L infinity, this is going to be bounded. So this can be used to, I mean, I'm not doing any of this, I'm just sketching it. This can be used to show mu is 1 plus O of 1 over K. So again, for large k, mu is 1. Mu plus. Now, for mu, so we should have said mu plus minus here. Go back and put a minus as well. Now, for phi minus, the condition is at minus infinity, you will have integrals that go from minus infinity to x. The rest is more or less the same. So y minus x will be negative in those integrals, and this will be okay if k has imaginary negatives. So similarly, mu minus can be shown to extend analytically for ki negative. Now I can find the formula for you for A and B. So you see here, 5 plus is e to the I, so I want to know what happens to this as x goes to minus infinity, right? It's supposed to be e to the ikx times a. So a is 1 minus 1 over 4 ik integral of V mu plus. B is going to be one over four IK integral of E to the two IKY V mu plus. Okay, so that's the scattering data. You start with V, you solve that integral equation. I haven't talked about spaces and so forth, but you do it. And once you have mu plus, you can define A and B this way. Now, A extends to an analytic function of K in the upper half plane. Complex plane. B need not extend analytically. Yes, sir? Yes, it does. But this grows exponentially. And so in the integral equations.
So what, phi should be analytic?
Phi is analytic.
Why?
Hmm?
Why is phi analytic?
Because it's e to the ikx times an analytic function.
But in the theory, what is phi? Okay. So phi is solution of equation, so why is analytic?
No. Well, you see that I've constructed some which are analytic in the upper half plane and some in the lower half plane.
So you said, given by this formula, is analytic?
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's e to the ikx, which is an analytic function of k, which bad behavior, but it's analytic in k, times this, which is analytic. So it's analytic in the upper half plane. Yes, and mu satisfies that integral equation. And I pointed out that in this integral equation, again, I didn't prove this, but this Green's function is analytic in K. So if you think of solving this by iteration, right, this is analytic in K and bounded, and solving it by iteration, one can prove mu is analytic in K. It takes a little bit of work, but not too much. Yes? No. Phi, you mean out of this one? Phi plus is e to the minus ikx.
Oh, so
times,
that's from the formula for mu up there. Okay.
Times b. No.
Okay.
Right here.
Okay.
And then I put phi plus is mu plus times e to the iky. But it does have this oscillatory thing. And so here, you see y is unrestricted, so this might blow up for k complex. So this need not extend. Actually, for V of compact support, it does. So in general, need not extend analytically. B. So fact the bound state well fact sorry A of K has zeros only, well, if A of K has zeros, they must be on the imaginary half axis. A extends to the upper half complex plane, and the zeros of A look like this when they are. They are simple and finitely many. Minus kappa j squared are the bound state energies. So to say that I assume there are no bound states, so for simplicity, we have assumed A does not vanish. So the bound states are connected to the poles of the transmission coefficient. Okay, so let's rewrite. I don't know, do we have triple star yet today? So rewrite triple star for mu. So we get mu plus over A equals mu minus plus R. So what am I doing? I'm dividing by E to the IKX. So it's E to the minus IKX. And this one gives me another E to the minus IKX. So there's two of them, mu minus. A minus key. So this is a particular, this is a simple example of what's called a Riemann-Hilbert problem. This function is holomorphic in the upper half plane. This function is holomorphic in the lower half plane. And on the real line, so given a curve gamma, in our case R, find a function holomorphic in C minus gamma with given additive or multiplicative jump across gamma. And so normalized by behavior at infinity. So this is how we are going to exploit the properties for K complex and K large. So let's make a little aside here. How do we do this very simply for a given jump in L2? So given a function f in L2 of the real line, write f of x by the Fourier inversion theorem like this. Bless you. And split that into two pieces, one with C negative. Well, let's take positive first. And another piece with C negative. I've written f as the sum of two functions. Now, this function, if you take xr plus I, x plus iy, since xi is positive, extends to an analytic function of x in the upper half plane. So I'm going to call this P plus F. and P minus A. So P plus extends to an analytic function in the upper half complex plane. Let's call it P plus F of Z is 1 over 2 pi 0 to infinity e to the I x plus I y xi f hat xi d xi y positive Moreover, P plus F X plus I Y, if you take the L2 norm in X for fixed Y, well, so Y is fixed, right? Y fixed is e to the ixc e to the minus yxc f hat xc dxc, right? So that's, if you wish, the inverse Fourier transform of this function as a function of x. So by Plancherel, this is equal to the integral from 0 to infinity e to the minus 2yxc, maybe with a 1 over 2 pi, f hat xc squared dxc. So that's less than or equal to the L2 norm of f. Independent of y. So the set of functions which are analytic in the upper half plane and on any horizontal line, their L2 norm is bounded independent of which horizontal line it takes. So in other words, sup over y, p plus f x plus I y squared dx is finite. That's the famous Hardy space for the upper. So p plus belongs to the Hardy space for the upper half plane. Let's call it H. H plus. Similarly, P minus F belongs to H minus. So extends to an analytic function in the lower half plane. Okay? Oh my God, I'm out of time. Okay, so can I have 3 more minutes to get to a punchline? So these are projection operators. So you can think of H as a subset of L2 of the line. In other words, those functions in L2 of the line which have an extension to analytic functions in the upper half plane with this property, H plus and H minus. So what I've shown you here is basically that L2 of the real line as a Hilbert space can be written as a sum of two Hilbert spaces. So each function can be decomposed. And that's, of course, very important in applications, causality, all that. That's what? Well, I mean, what's in the intersection? In fact, they're orthogonal, but what's in the intersection? Right? You need functions f that are supported in the up.
Well, if we believe that that's not how you define it.
Okay. Right. But I only have 2.5 minutes left.
Sorry.
So, yeah, in fact, they're orthogonal. P plus minus are orthogonal projections. I'll have to come back to this next time, but anyway, projections. So basically what we do here we subtract 1 from both sides. Now this is behaves like 1 over k at infinity, which is in L2. So this is H minus. This is in H plus. So I apply P minus to both sides. Ikx mu minus. Now, this function is analytic. This is in H plus. So P minus of it is 0. Parenthetically, let me say, if A had zeros, this would have some poles, and P minus would pick them up, so you'd get some more terms coming from the bound states. So we have no bound states. This P minus of this is 0. Mu minus minus 1 is a minus function, so P minus of it is itself. This is minus k. Maybe I should say r prime here, because so this gives me an integral equation. For mu minus given R. So if you give me the reflection coefficient, I solve this integral equation. It's a linear integral equation for mu minus. Well, I mean, you could put minus k. It doesn't matter, I don't think. I'll show you next time that this is really an integral equation, I mean, integral kernel, which is something like k minus k prime. So if you want to change k prime to minus k prime. So this is the famous Gelfand-Levitan equation in disguise. So it doesn't look at all like the Gelfand-Levitan equation. They basically take a Fourier transform of this in K, and it becomes an... But basically, that's it. So I wanted to point out that in this case, the Riemann-Hilbert problem is not so hard to solve. We have the analyticity of this in one half space, analyticity of this in the upper half and lower half plane, this condition on the real line leads us, using analytic properties of K, leads us to an integral equation for mu minus given the reflection coefficient. So notice that you don't need to know A. You just need to know R. The transmission coefficient doesn't enter. The poles do come in. So that's why it's a little more complicated when there are eigenvalues, but this is, I'm using this for motivation for D bar, so. Right. Well, there are all sorts of ways of finding V. A trivial way is to use the. So mu minus satisfies this. So if you want, you can just do this, and there's V. But there are more elegant ways. So once you have mu minus, you have the potential. No. So when there are poles, you need to give me that information. Not A, but just its poles, its zeros. So that was what Bargmann showed. Bargmann showed that even knowing the poles is not enough. You also need the so-called norming constants, which are the residues at the poles. And Bargmann showed that if you don't have that information, you can find lots of non-uniqueness in the inverse problem. So there are potentials V with R zero, which are non-trivial. So in general, you need more than just R. You need R, the pole, the bound state, energies, and the so-called norming constants. Just quickly for the... next week with no lecture. It's a reading week, so it's time for you to read the notes in the course. For the fans of KdV, let me say, A is the constant of the motion. So if V evolves according to KdV, A stays constant. In particular, the zeros stay constant, so the eigenvalues don't move. R evolves linearly. Pardon me? Yes. This is the inverse scattering method, and by that, if you put that together with what I just said the last half second, That's how you solve K. I will, yeah, I will.